All right, episode three is live. Hi, everyone. I was just looking over the tracking metrics, and I want to say thank you to those who have downloaded the Triple S podcast. This content is intended to grow the sport by providing information so you can improve the foundation of your own game in the tiny, fine details that go way beyond the typical gun club advice of you're behind it, 2 feet of lead, or just be confident, bro. Now, with that said, if we want the sport to grow, the easiest way is at the base level of casual shooters that come in a couple times a year. I looked it up, and the National Shooting Sports Foundation says that millions of people shoot clay target sports each year. And we just looked, the membership for the NSSA is only about 15,000. For the NSCA, it's around 22,000. Telling people to just come out more doesn't work at all. However, them breaking more targets and putting up higher scores will. No one ever quit skeet because they're shooting too high of scores or hitting the target too hard. So when you see a casual shooter come out off the field as they're getting that done, tell them to look up Skeet Shooter Society on their phone. We're now on Spotify, Apple Music, excuse me, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. And we're also on a lot of smaller podcast directories. You may be a sporting clay shooter and are reluctant to have to pay $173 for 100 feet test targets. Come join us on the ski field that costs a fraction of sporting, and we won't make you wear long pants or blow a whistle at you. Do you have a youth team that does all three disciplines and maybe aren't shooting as well in skeet as they do in trap? Talk to their coach who might not know much about skeet. Tell them about the instructional episodes we're dropping for each target. Tell the parents of the kids who want to see them succeed, whose improvement is not coming as fast as it could. Listening to one of these podcasts for problem targets on the way home can give them that aha moment that they need to really break through. Here's another one. Do you have that guy at the club who likes to throw holes when he misses the same target he missed the last round and last week, tends to be animated and lets colorful language slip every other station? Well, you know what to do. So, Victoria, other than playing female Bob the Builder, what is going on with you in Arizona?
Not much. So today I just moved all of my stuff from my storage unit to the property. We built a little shed there. And so now everything is on the property. I guess technically we're moved in, but we're still living in the camper. So how about you?
I'm getting ready for our weekend shoot. We've got one before our state shoot, so as soon as I get done recording with this, I'm going to bed early. So, low one. People don't talk about low one that much. I think it's because once it's learned well enough that losses are no longer as prevalent, way too many people take it for granted. Plenty of people are guilty of this, and neglecting practice with proper fundamentals can let a lot of bad habits creep in.
Yes, and so while it is, still one that we want to follow the fundamentals on, it's also one that you can play around with a lot more as you have a lot of wiggle room with this target. So in this podcast, we are going to tell you the fundamentals and then how each of us approach it. But we want you to remember that you can kind of change up some things. There's a lot of room for this target. It is very forgiving. So feel free to try things, say, hey, this works, or hey, this doesn't work.
Right. I'd say what we want to guard against, especially early on for shooters who are starting, is generating excessive body movement. Too many people think that you need to move so much in the beginning, but a problem you're having is blasting so far ahead that you may take your eyes off the target. This can happen right away after you see the target, which means early on in the shot, you will lose that feeling of control you have over a slow incoming target.
From there, you're gonna blast ahead of it, get so far out, you're gonna turn around with your eyes, say, oh, it's way back there. Stop the gun, pull the trigger, and you're gonna end up shooting behind it, even though you had so much lead on it. And so, what's gonna happen? Everybody at the gun club is gonna say, oh, you're behind it, put more lead on it. You're gonna end up putting more lead on it. Next thing you know, you're gonna have 3 or 4 feet of lead on this target. And you're still going to be missing it. You're going to be confused. So we want to try to help you avoid that situation with this podcast.
Yeah, I'd say there's even a worse variant of this problem, and it's when you start movement when you're saying the word pull. I call it wor yeah, I call it worse because most shooters don't even realize that they're doing it. And this doesn't just apply to newer shooters. It could be intermediate, even ones that break the higher scores. It can happen every now and again. By doing this, if you do this, you'll never have a chance because you moved before you ever saw the target. And I really want to emphasize that you're moving before the target comes out. You're moving before you see the target. You are moving your body literally as the word pull is coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, and you can do this on any station. This is not a low one specific problem. And it will really cost you targets on faster shots like high two or low six.
Yeah. And I'm sure everyone listening to this will think, no, duh, of course you need to see the target. But you may have missed a target recently and you have no idea why. Not so much low one, but high two, low six, low five, high three, perhaps the double on four because you're nervous. This is not a problem exclusive to low one or slow incomers, but not even skeet even. This is, can be a problem for every target of every clay target discipline out there to be aware of. And considering that many people who will download and listen to this podcast, they may be new shooters, we really want to ingrain that and pass on that information.
And a lot of times it stems from getting beaten by a target. So if you practice sitting there and waiting, it'll become much more natural. However, if a target comes out, say you're shooting high two and you're at your normal hold point and the high house dives, it's going to get under you, it's going to get past you, it's just going to seem a whole lot faster. And when that happens, your tendency from then on is to guard against anything getting past you, and it might cause you to move on your call. Rather than waiting until you see it.
Yeah, and something else I want to emphasize is this mistake of moving before you see the target. It'll give you that feeling of having no control over the target and not knowing what happened or what is needed to correct it. So when I'm trying to explain some concepts of a target for something like high or low four, it's I like to call it disequity of movement. Or lack of equilibrium in movement. And the way I explain it is at our range in Utah, Lee K, Victoria's been there before. Behind the skeet fields, a couple hundred yards away is a highway, and the cars are moving between 65 and 75 miles an hour. And I tell people, turn around, put your index finger, your lead finger, on one of those cars and watch it and track it as it moves across the highway. And I tell them, your finger just moved a few inches in several seconds, but those cars are moving 65 miles an hour plus. Why is that? It's because they're far away. Your proximity to your target of that vehicle. And that's why I say you need to move a lot less on these slower incomers. Because that target is so far away from you, you don't need a lot of movement to match target gun speed to target speed.
Right. And a lot of times when you're close to the target, it'll also appear faster because of the angles. So when it's a very, that target is almost coming towards you, like low one, it's going to seem a lot slower. And when it's going away from you, you've probably noticed on high one, high two, it seems like it's blazing. That's partially due to the angle as well as the distance.
Yeah, and as we go on into our future episodes, we'll touch on this in high two, low six, especially because those are very common problems on the corner stations. Those targets, when they come out, you do not see them as a clear clay target when you initiate your movement. You see them as a flash. Well, with these slower incomers, you can see that low one as a clear clay target right after it comes out. It's not so much a flash. And that has to do with your distance and with the angle of the target. It's coming right at you. And there's very little gun movement. very little gun movement that you need to generate in order to match gun speed to target speed. And when you do that, if you look back and self-reflect, you did not move your body that much. As you were rotating, it was such a steady move that it didn't take much to break this target. And I find with people that are shooting heavier loads, maybe you can get away with a lot on that. You can have a very improper move to the target. You do not have to match gun speed anywhere near as well. And you can still break that target into a few pieces. Well, with those heavier loads, you miss with most of those BBs. I like to call it the 12 gauge crutch. Those Antonov Walmart shells that we all used to be able to find for $5 a box now struggle to. Well, that's what I called it.
And so, like he was saying before, when this target's coming in, you have a lot of room for error. That's why it's a great target to start out on. Low one, high seven. Just kind of set it up and look for it. Let it come across. And that is going to be the perfect place to practice all the fundamentals of skeet shooting. It's going to be the perfect place to practice your look point. You're picking up the target, tracking it, and really getting that hard focus that you want to see.
Yeah, it can also be a perfect target for someone who is not just new to skeet, but new to shotgun shooting in general. Someone that maybe goes out every now and then, plinks at the rifle range, at the pistol range, has a shotgun for home defense because you don't need to aim at all with a shotgun.
Yeah, and I like low one and high seven better than low seven for first targets. I know a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I'm shooting low seven. That doesn't really teach you how to shoot a shotgun. It teaches you how to shoot a rifle. Like you're pointing at a target that's going straight away from you. Unless you plan on getting into a trap and you're just shooting station three where it's going straight away from you, that's not really going to work. So you need, even in trap, you're going to get some angles. You're going to have to learn how to lead a target. So shooting things that are coming towards you or shooting on the outer stations is going to teach you how to move the gun. So maybe you're taking someone out to the field for the first time. Low one, great target to start them on. It lets them practice that. Like I said before, seeing it come out, acquiring it, tracking it, and pulling the trigger when they get that hard focus.
Right. So another issue that I find can be a problem is rolling shoulders. Can you explain what that is for our listeners?
Yes. So rolling the shoulders comes from shifting your weight while you're swinging the gun. And so, as we mentioned before, we want a good chunk of the weight on the front leg. So, if you're a right-handed shooter, that's going to be your left leg. If you're a left-handed shooter, that's going to be your right leg. Basically, it's the leg that's closer to the center stake. And the reason for that is because it allows you to drive with the legs. It puts you in a really good position to push the feet into the ground and use the quads and shift and turn. Now, when I say shift and turn, I mean shifting through the feet, so pushing on the ground, and that's going to cause the turn. We don't want to shift our weight. So if we have 70% of our weight on that front leg, we want it to be there when we start and when we take the shot. We don't want it to shift back to our back leg. So if it shifts back to your back leg at any point, you're going to start to lean back and you could roll your shoulders as in they become unlevel. So when you mount the gun, your shoulders should be level. And if you shift your weight back, one shoulder can get higher than the other.
Yeah, and I was listening to a conversation about rolling shoulders several years back, and they're talking about how it's not uncommon that some newer shooters will take low one so late and so close to themselves that up close they will roll off of a target. And because the pattern is so small at such a close range, regardless of choke or shell, that you will miss because of this.
That is pretty true, actually. You still do have a pretty good chance of hitting it, even when it's that close. But as soon as you roll those shoulders and kind of become an upper body shooter, yeah, your chances of breaking it do go down. It also can cause you, and I don't know if you've seen this before or not, but it can cause you to kind of fall off the station. So if you're, say, you're a left-handed shooter, you're shooting a low one, it's coming across. As you roll your shoulders, you're getting thrown off balance, and you're going to take a few steps off the station.
Right. So we touch on some problem areas and some things to look out for. Let's talk about how to correct these mistakes.
So let's start with the fundamentals. Your foot position does not change. So if you are a right-handed shooter, your belly button is still facing the low house window. If you're a left-handed shooter, you're still facing straight out, kind of into the field beyond all, where all that shot is falling. Now, the fundamentals say your hole point is about a third of the way out from the low house. So that is between the center stake and the window. And a lot of people, when they're first starting, will mark a third of the way out, maybe a stack of targets or a little cone or something. You can't do this in a tournament, so don't rely on it solely, but it's a good idea if you're just getting started to kind of understand where to hold. From there, you are going to look back towards the window. A lot of people look a couple feet off the window. The key thing here is to not look in the window because it creates too much contrast. Your eyes are looking into a dark hole, a target's going to emerge, and your eyes are going to have to try to shift back to the light sky and pick up that target. So usually the eye is a few feet off of the window.
Yeah, and in our previous episode, we touched on having soft focus, relaxed focus, taking in that general area that you're looking at, and the margin you have way more margin for error on targets like low one with how you look at it. Just not, I would re recommend just what Victoria said. Do not look at a small pinpoint area, just looking at the inside of the window, because the eyes, it's far easier to start with a loose focus, taking in an entire area with, and then locking onto a target, having hard focus on it, as compared to starting hard and then loosing it up. It takes far longer, it's far more difficult, and it's not anywhere near as comfortable. So look in the general area with soft focus. As you see that target come out, slowly initiate your gun movement. Yeah,
And
and
so the fundamentals continue. You want to shoot it where you're going to shoot it in doubles. So you want to shoot it on your side of the center stake, about 15 feet on your side of the center stake. And the ideal perceived lead is about a foot.
right, and that perceived lead, it can vary drastically from person to person. You may be able to feel that lead. Me personally, I really don't see much of any lead. Obviously, there is some, but that'll depend on your own vision. Going back to order of operations, how we approach this target. So you have your foot position, where Victoria said, and this can be tweaked from person to person, how your own body is. Your whole point for me is just a few feet out to the left, several feet out. Again, you can play with this. There's a lot more margin for error on targets like this in high seven. You look at it in soft focus, taking the whole general area. Once your eyes are relaxed and calm, you call pull. You wait to see the target. I just want to emphasize that there is that wait, just a small fraction of a second in there. It can be anywhere from 0 to 1 second according to the rules of the NSSA, at least last time I looked at the rules. So call pull, wait to see the target. You see the target, then you begin your movement. And going back to what I mentioned of my concept of disequity of movement because of your proximity to the target so far away, your movement will be very minimal. And you'll feel this in your legs, in your feet. Your movement will essentially be you pressing down with your feet as you rotate. You'll feel this in your thighs or your quads, whatever you want to call those legs of yours. You will match gun speed to target speed. And in this, you will have locked onto the target before that, as soon as you see the target. As it approaches your breakpoint, you'll pull the target. And all things being equal, if you do these correctly, you will smoke that target. It won't be a break into a just a few pieces.
And the key there is to look at the target. When he's saying, we emphasize weight, we emphasize, not seeing a very specific lead. That's because we want you to look at the target. Your eyes do almost all the work on the skeet field. So once you get your soft focus, you call pull, let your eyes pick up the target. That is what should initiate your movement. And then let your eyes really take it in. See the rings on this one. You have all the time in the world to shoot low one. So once you get that good hard focus on the target, go ahead and pull the trigger. Don't take your eyes off of it. Make sure you're always looking at the target through the shot.
Yeah, something else I wanted to touch on, I really didn't even write this down, is something that came to mind from what a really prolific sporting clay shooter would say, Zach Keenbaum, if you've ever listened to him on the Shotgun Sports USA or the old Behind the Break podcast. One of his favorite sayings is, see it late, see it break. And this goes back to the metric that you can only have hard focus on a clay target for less than a second. It was a very small amount of time that was quoted. So essentially, you're only going to have hard focus on the target as it's in the break point, in the break zone. It's not like you're going to be able to see the rings on that target when it's still on the other side of the field. So you are going to see this for the entirety of its flight as you're initiating movement and matching gun speed to target speed, but that area where you're breaking at is where you will have the hardest focus on that target.
And once you get that hardest focus, like he said, it's in the break zone. Pull the trigger immediately. That should be your cue to pull the trigger.
Okay. So, Victoria, would you like to talk about the double for station one now?
Sure. So the doubles for station one, literally, you just shoot them like two singles. That is pretty much the fundamentals. You use the same hole point for the high house. You shoot the high house first, and then you let your eyes shift to the right and you pick up the low house as it's coming across and shoot it like a single. So, not the most interesting of shots to discuss.
Yeah, when talking about the double on station one, I think there's a little bit more to be aware of than just the high and the low. Not so much in the fundamentals, but what can happen between those two targets. So recoil control comes to mind for me especially. I found that before I had a stock that fit me well, recoil after shooting the high house, regardless of gauge really, would shift the stock in my shoulder that I need to hold it far tighter than I should have. People used to say I had a death grip, which I did, is the only way I can mitigate it. And this was because I didn't have the proper pitch in my stock. If you feel this is happening to you, you may want to experiment with a pitch spacer or just some coins that you can wedge between your pad and the wood of your stock. Since this is audio only, I can't show you my own gun, but looking up how to adjust pitch online, just a quick web search. I can give you more information, though we'll both recommend that consulting someone knowledgeable on fitting clay target shotguns is always going to be the best avenue for you.
And I would like to expand on that. He's talking about the stocks, but the grip also affects how you shoot the doubles. So what he's talking about is the gun sliding around in your shoulder. It's giving you a downward motion. If you find that you're having a lot of upward motion, you might need to front forehand, because the forehands and how you can get your hand on there, it does really matter. If the forehand is far too big for your hand, gun's gonna jump up because you can't control the muzzle. This can sometimes be a safety issue, but for the most part, it's just really inconvenient on doubles because you need to turn that gun around quickly. And if you can't grip it and control it, you're not gonna be able to do that.
And my reason for talking about pitch initially, though, grip as well, not just on your palm swell, but your forehand, is that after breaking the high house and your gun gets so displaced from your control, it can shift to where your gun ends up, where your hole point should not be. And it'll make it more difficult for you to locate that low house target as it's incoming, even with soft focus of vision, even when everything else was done correctly. It can set you up to where you make a very improper move to that low house target. You do not m properly match gun speed to target speed, and you know, result in a lost target. So these are all th X factors that you need to be aware of when approaching topics like doubles, and these will be amplified even more when you move off of the baseline onto the corners, i.e. stations 2 and 6, especially when you shoot doubles on 3, 4, and 5.
And so I want to scoot on from there and get into the eyes. So Matt mentioned soft focus, and you're like, wait a second, I've shot one target. How am I supposed to have soft focus? That is actually a very important part of double shooting. So after you break the first target, you do want to relax your eyes, get back into that soft focus, because, like I said, you're going to be looking for it like it's a single. And so there are a couple different methods people use to kind of relax their eyes. And one of them, I find it doesn't relax your eyes at all. It's actually forcing them to look to the right or the left or whatever station you are on, forcing them to look where that target's coming. That can get your eyes into a hard focus. And so I would say avoid that. Instead, what I would recommend for soft focusing is kind of, so you've just shot high one, right? As you see the pieces break, obviously you need to watch high one long enough to tell whether you hit it or miss it. If you can't tell us whether you're hitting or missing the first one on doubles, you need to watch that shot longer. But once you see whether you hit it or you miss it, just kind of relax your eyes where those pieces are. Kind of let your eyes sit in that general region, and that'll set you up perfectly for picking up low one.
Yeah, and I'll summarize it for you. Watch the pieces after you break the target. Not
But
only
not with a hard focus.
not with a hard
No.
focus. Yeah, essentially taking that opportunity to let your eyes widen some more and let them relax so that it can shift back to that low focus mode in order to pick up the second target. But also, so you set up a proper shift in order to take on that second target. We'll get into this more as we talk about doubles on 3, 4, and 5, but the transition from the first target to the second target, it doubles really doesn't have anything to do about the second target. If your setup on the first one is correct, then the second target on doubles
Fairly easy.
is fairly easy. I almost said afterthought. But I know we really don't think about the second target if we were shoot double on 7, but it's important that doubles, regardless of station, has everything to do with the first shot. And you'll hear just about every single qualified ski coach reiterate the same notion.
So we also want to talk a little bit, so we've kind of touched on what you should be doing. We also want to touch on what you shouldn't be doing. So once you break the high one, I just want to kind of reemphasize this. You should not be hard focusing on the pieces, and you should also not hard focus on your bead. So it's very easy in doubles after you break the first one for people's eyes to lock onto that bead. And that is something that you want to avoid.
Right. And if you're wondering what Victoria is talking about, in our previous episode on a high one of the things we talked about, a potential remedy, is to essentially index your look point, your soft focus look point, using the top of your rib, your front bead. We did not say, nor are we saying now, to look at your bead, to look at your barrel, your rib, any of that, but just to keep that in your peripheral vision. So, as to prevent your eyes from drifting up, drifting to the side, just so you're not just looking at a dead area of sky often in the background.
Right. And as with the singles, We don't want to try to measure our lead off the barrel and the target. We want to look at the target only. So only looking at the high house, then shoot it, relax your vision, pick up the second one, and only look at the low house. So make sure that you are not trying to measure. Make sure that your eyes aren't going back to the barrel at any point. You should only be looking at the targets.
And going back to how we move with a target, it's very easy considering that low one, both on the single and the double, this target has a lot more margin for error. You can get away with a lot and still break this target. Is at on the double after successfully breaking the high house, you can pretty much spot shoot if you wanted to the low one. However, this is not recommended because you're, for one, you're spending too little time on the target. You're not giving enough time to match gun speed or target speed, syncing up the movement of your body with this target and moving with it in order to get a good break on it. So that's another thing to be aware of. If you're doing it, this is us telling you not to do that.
And if you're not aware of what spot shooting is, spot shooting is basically going to the place where you think that the target's going to be and pulling the trigger. So you don't actually see it, you don't track it. A lot of times in doubles, it'll come across as a bang bang, really quick. I shot the first one and then I shot the second one immediately. And that's because you shot the first one and then you stuck the gun right where you expected the second one to be and just pulled the trigger. What you want to do is let your eyes do the work. So shoot the first one and then let your eyes pick up the second one and track it.
Yeah, and I know you haven't seen me shoot, but I'm sometimes guilty of this myself where I'll have a good break, an early break on the high one, and I'll just see the low house and I'll just spot shoot it. And I know I shouldn't. It's something that I've been slowly breaking the habit of. But you can do it, and it's something to be that you really have to work against to get rid of that poor habit. And it's one of the main reasons why we are ha making these podcasts so we can prevent you from establishing poor habits early on.
Or help you break any that you may have picked up along the way.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we cover quite a lot.
Yes, we were able to get through low house and the doubles, only once. So hopefully that can help you guys get through station one and start breaking more targets there.
Yeah, and we only had two minor interruptions due to internet connection.
Yes, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, Victoria's raising her hand right now. That's okay. You guys can rewind and all right.
Yes, sorry. I have a Starlink and it's usually very good, but when we get a lot of people here at the gun club using it, it's like, okay, people, stop streaming.
I don't think people know you are currently camped out next to
At
a
the
gun
gun
club,
club.
as in
Yes.
you could open your window, draw your blinds, and literally look out and see a skeet field.
Yep. And the sporting clays, five stand and trap fields.
Yeah,
So
that's just raw temptation.
it is. I end up shooting a lot.
Normally that's a good thing. Normally. Okay, well, everyone, thank you very much for listening to the Skeet Shooter Society podcast. Join us next time where we will be covering High 2. All right, goodbye. Have